"You're popular," Gint observed. She grinned. "I've been doing this for a while." "Where are you planning to let us off?" I asked. She glanced at me. "Not far from here. Figured you might want to avoid any prying eyes." I nodded and turned back. I'd seen worse places, but not by much. Clapboard buildings rose from the muddy dockside in irregular rows, stretching back and out of sight. The streets were serpentine streaks of brown, and the buildings were square, squalid things, cheaply made decades ago. The sort of structures thrown up by newly arrived colonists to get them through their first harvest season before more permanent habitations could be erected. Only, by the looks of things, that had never happened here. The streets were still mud, where they weren't duckboards or sawn planks. The shacks were mostly rotting on their foundations, despite the years' worth of repairs that marked them all. And everywhere was overgrown. Thick grasses sprouted in the narrow alleys and passages, trees twisted upwards among and, in at least one case, through the older buildings. Moss lamps hanging from posts and lintels cast a dull ochre glow over the places where the faint natural light didn't reach. A few shacks clung to the edges of the canal nearby, or sat on stilts further out in the hollows between the islands that made up the town's edges. They were connected to the main drag by badly maintained pontoon bridges or rickety planks. "Not as quaint as I pictured it," Gint said. "Still, bigger than I feared. I might actually find a decent game or three in a slum like this." I didn't bother to reply. I had come to the conclusion that Gint talked mostly to hear himself spout off. A flash of metal from beneath a jetty caught my attention. Several children had gathered in the shallows. As the skiff drew close, there was another flash as a knife passed over fingers and palms, drawing blood. I watched as the children dipped their bloody hands into the brambles and reeds growing about the jetty pylons. When they withdrew their fingers, the blood was gone, as if it had been licked clean. I felt a chill as several of the children looked at the skiff, nothing in their eyes. No curiosity, no fear, nothing. "What are they doing?" I asked. "Celebrating the harvest," Deshler said quietly. "Best to ignore it."
"Lot to ignore out here," Gint said.
"Lot to ignore in the cities as well," Deshler said. "Just harder to do out here." She turned as music crept across the air. She shook her head. "Starting early this year." I saw people dancing down among the shacks, singing and celebrating. They danced among the reeds, awkward, graceless movements that reminded me of trees caught in a strong wind. They showed no interest in the skiff as it slid past. All of them were wearing masks made from corn husks, vines and leaves. The music was the sort of ribald clamoring that I'd come to associate with the wilds. Music with unfamiliar rhythms and wilder melodies than I preferred. "I thought Talia's playing was bad," Gint murmured. I didn't laugh. Gint cleared his throat. "His lordship mentioned a celebration, didn't he?" Deshler frowned. "It's the harvest. Happens whenever the waters drop and the eels start to sing." She waved to a group of distant revelers as they sent up a whooping cry that carried through the trees.
Lots of guests. Oh, my, yes. All of them come up from them downriver cantons at his lordship's behest. All to celebrate the coming harvest, and take part in his lordship's hunts.
Hunts like the one we just saw.
Deshler didn't meet my eyes.
No, eels, mostly, or troggoths, deer, sometimes.
Hunts and harvests don't seem to go together, Gint said.
The harvest, the hunt, it's all the same, Deshler said. Life feeds life. Something gets torn up and wolfed down, and them that eats goes on for another year. That's what it's all about, especially here. She sighed. Speaking of which...
The skiff bumped up against a jetty. She tossed me a rope.
Here, tie us up.
Gingerly, I clambered out onto the slimy jetty and looped the rope about a mooring post. As I knotted it, I heard Deshler murmur a warning and straightened, my hand on my knife.
Oi, you can't berth here,
a heavy voice growled. I turned. He was big, with a labourer's muscles underneath his ill-fitting hauberk. A town guard. He had a sword belted at his waist. I stepped back, hands raised. The big man glared at me, face twisted in a sneer of derision.
Did you hear me, trash? Get that boat out of here.
I frowned. My apologies, friend. I could tell that he was spoiling for a fight and smelled strongly of something alcoholic. A week and more elsewhere.
Stuff your apologies.
The sneer became a snarl.
You think you're allowed to moor this leaky piece of shit anywhere you like, is that it?
He reached for me, almost lazily. A bully, used to throwing smaller men around. I easily avoided his grip and snatched my knife from its sheath. I pressed the tip to just above his belt, through a gap in his hauberk. The big man froze, his sneer slipping into an expression of fright.
What's your name? I asked softly.
Buell,
he said, after a moment's hesitation.
Buell, do you want me to spill your guts on the dock here?
Buell shook his head. I smiled.
No, I didn't think so. But I will, unless you close your fat mouth, turn around and pretend this never happened. Do you understand?
Buell licked his lips. I could read the indecision in his eyes. Humiliation would eat at him like acid, even if it was private. His gaze flicked to the hilt of his sword. I leaned close, just short of sliding the knife in.
Decide quickly, Buell.
The big man relaxed and stepped back, hands spread slightly.
Next time,
he muttered, before turning on his heel and sloping off. I heard Gint whistle and Deshler release a pent-up breath.
Sigmar's balls, I thought he was going to go for his sword,
she said.
Never seen Big Buell run off with his tail between his legs before.
You know him? I asked, watching the guard vanish into the rain.
Everyone knows him. He likes to roust the fishermen.
She climbed up onto the dock and held out her hand.
Coin.
I handed over the comet, and it vanished into her robes. She grinned.
Pleasure doing business with you. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have eels to unload.
I started walking as Gint climbed up onto the dock.
Wait up, he shouted. I didn't. Chapter 8 Walled. "Think she'll do as she promised?" Gint asked, after he caught up with me. We strode through the streets, side by side. The rain fell in sheets over the town, and every roof edge was a waterfall. It didn't seem to dampen the celebratory spirit of the inhabitants, however. Music echoed through the narrow streets. I grunted. "Whether she does or not, she'll talk." "And that's what you want?" I nodded. Gint grinned. "Clever. I mean, dangerous, but clever." He paused. "So, who's man?" "None of your business." "Fair enough, but I might be able to help. Two heads are better than one, and all that." "I thought you were here looking for a wife." "Until then, I need something to keep me occupied." I snorted. "He owes someone money. I'm here to collect." Gint paused briefly. "Somehow, I think you're leaving something out." I didn't reply. I was somewhere else. The music had put me in mind of another place, another time. I recalled the taste of dust at the back of my throat and could feel the heat beating down, despite the rain. 10th cohort had mustered in the shadow of Barat, the Sky City, preparing for the long march back to Hammerhal Aksha, after the Third Darazi War. The locals were celebrating, playing their weird bone flutes and beating their salamanderhide drums. I'd never seen an army ready itself for march before, not up close, and the noise, the confusion of it all, had been overwhelming. Tents falling like waves breaking against the shore, the sound of thousands of voices raised in command, in protest, in laughter. The rattle of weapons, the boom of cannons as excess powder was expended to lighten wagon loads. Despite the noise and dust, it was efficient. The gold griffins were masters of their craft, and a camp of thousands could be made ready to march in a day or less. They were among the largest of the Free Guild regiments out of Azerheim. If there was a battlefield, soldiers bearing the heraldry of the Gold Griffins had likely shed blood on it. They'd fought in Chamon, in Akshi, and Gairon, even in Shaiish. I remembered my father telling me what a great honor it was to serve with such a regiment. Then, my father told me a lot of things. I'd been barely more than a boy, wrapped in gold and azure, clutching a hammer I had yet to swing at anything more threatening than a few wolf rats. It was my first posting, a favor to my father by an old friend. Of course, the Gold Griffins had had little use for priests, and Archlector Cassian had even less. He'd been a holy terror, a bellicose warrior, with less interest in men's souls than in how well they wielded a blade in Sigmar's name. Gruff, impassive, and loud. I'd liked him, though I doubted the feeling had been mutual. I recalled looking up, seeing the underside of Barat for the first time, the sheer, aching expanse of a city in the sky. Strange towers hung like stalactites from the city's belly, amid great mechanism bastions and ether drifts. Innumerable bridges and skyways were strung like garlands, and if I squinted, I could almost make out people crossing them. I'd stared upwards for what felt like hours. In reality, it had only been a few moments, until Cassian had slapped me on the back of the head, breaking the spell. I missed him, sometimes, until I remembered why I'd killed him. "We're being watched." Gint's voice shook me from my reverie. "What?" He jerked his chin, I glanced around. There were guards patrolling the back streets. More than I expected for such a place, I could feel a tension on the air. Familiar to any city dweller, some of the guards eyed us more closely than I liked. I kept my head down and tried not to attract attention. "We're strangers," I said. We passed an old statue of Sigmar the Redeemer, kneeling on a cracked and crumbling plinth. The statue had been beaten into submission by the weather and the moss that clung to Sigmar's face like a second beard. I glanced at it, wondering how the God King felt about such desecration. I suppose if Sigmar cared, he'd have done something about it. About all of it. "This town isn't very welcoming at first glance," Gint continued. "I've seen worse," I said. Around us the shops were open, and the smell of baking bread and spilled beer filled the damp air. Walkways and balconies formed a creaking canopy overhead, and weak waterfalls of rain splashed down through them to spill across the cobbles. Jade-feathered swamp birds nested in the high gutters, and piebald mongrels stalked the cul-de-sacs, hunting rats. I caught a flash of something black out of the corner of my eye and turned, a knife in my hand. Something that might have been a dog scuttled away from me. The beast had been following us, perhaps hoping for a meal. Something about it unsettled me, though I couldn't say why. Something about the way it had moved, awkward and stiff. It reminded me of the beasts I'd seen in the swamp. "What is it? What did you see?" Gint asked. "Nothing." Gint frowned, but didn't ask any more questions. I pressed on, and he followed. This far from the palisade, the streets were crowded. Smoke hung on the wet air, and the growl of commerce squeezed out all other sound. Vendors rang bells or bellowed their prices. Wagon wheels clattered. Strangest of all, an eel made from paper and wood curled between the buildings, creeping along on a dozen stamping feet. We were forced to stop as the procession crossed the street ahead of us. It spilled into a nearby square, and the eel spun and writhed, feet splashing in the mud. People laughed and clapped, and the music grew wilder and louder. Many of them wore those crude vine and corn husk masks, and clashed knives and sickles. "Tools of the hunt and harvest," Gint murmured. I looked at him.
"What?"
"Nothing. So are we just going to wander around forever, or..."
"Quiet," I said.
"Answer the question and I'll consider it."
"Fine.
Ever played Injured Bird? It was an old game in the fastness. You played at being lost or stupid or drunk, and waited to see who was stupid enough to take the bait."
"Maybe."
Gint frowned. "Is that what we're doing? Why?" "I'll tell you in a moment." I'd felt the fingers on my coat a moment before I replied, quick but clumsy. Then it wasn't the sort of art that required finesse out here. I clamped my hand around the offending digits and squeezed. Someone yelped and I turned. The pickpocket tried to pull away, but he wasn't strong enough or fast enough. He was a little fellow, wiry and lean. Malnourished, with pox scars on his face, and wearing rough homespun clothes. But he was armed. I snatched the knife from his belt and tossed it to Gint.
"Hold this."
Then I hit the pickpocket low and lifted him slightly off his feet. He stumbled, but I didn't release him. I hit him again, barely more than a tap, just to assert my position, and propelled him into a nearby alleyway and away from the crowd. Gint followed, a startled look on his face. I waved him back as I deposited the pickpocket into a trough of rainwater. No one paid any attention to us, or if they did, they knew better than to interfere.
"What are you doing?" Gint demanded.
"Shut up and keep a lookout." I shoved the struggling, cursing pickpocket's head beneath the water and counted to five. "I want to talk to whoever is in charge," I said as I dragged the pickpocket out of the trough. "Point me in the right direction or I'll start cutting pieces off." He stammered a curse and I thrust him back under the water. Gint caught at my shoulder.
"Don't kill him,"
he hissed. "I thought I told you to shut up and keep an eye out for the guards." I hauled the spluttering man up. "Ready to tell me what I want to know?"
"What do you want?"
he gasped. "I told you, I want to talk to whoever is in charge. Look at my face. Think you'll remember it?" He nodded and I dragged him out of the trough. "Good. Now go tell somebody who matters." I shoved him towards the mouth of the alleyway and gave him a kick to encourage him. "That wasn't smart," Gint said. "I can't imagine the criminals around here are the refined sort. They'll come looking. That's the idea."
"So?"
"Men like to gamble," I said. "I doubt that's changed."
"I don't understand."
"If Mern owes money, his debtors may know where he is."
"How do you know?"
"Because I would."
"And you think they'll just, what, share information in the spirit of cooperation?"
"No, I think they'll send someone after me. Then, after I hurt them, the boss will talk to me. Might even try and hire me."
"And then?"
Gint prodded. "And then I'll find out what I need to find out." Gint shook his head.
"All very simple, except for the bits involving violence."
I shrugged. "I've never had a problem with violence. I'd always been very good at it, in fact. The priest part had always been less appealing than the warrior part. That was one of the reasons I'd taken Caspar Gunnar up on his offer that day, rather than joining another regiment under an assumed name. When I was hitting something or being hit, I wasn't thinking. And when I wasn't hitting, I could be drinking or whoring or any number of other more pleasant activities than thinking. Being a blunt object wasn't as bad as it sounded. Besides which, it was thinking that had got me in trouble in the first place. Someone blew a winding horn, and four men clad in a wooden mock-up of a giant stag tromped down the street to meet the eel in what I thought was either fierce battle or an amorous encounter. Maybe both. I watched it and felt something great inside me. My mind kept trying to go back to that night in the swamp, and I fought it with every bit of will I had. In the fastness, you learned quick not to see things. If it wasn't your business, you kept your nose out of it. This wasn't my business. This wasn't my place. I had one thing to do and one thing only. And once it was done, I was leaving and never looking back. Wald could keep its secrets. I had plenty of my own. Dancers clad in bells and bark spun and yelped in time to the soaring rhythm of a fiddler as she led them past the battle, trailed by laughing children. The eel burst away from its opponent in a flurry of undulations and crimson paper and slithered towards us, paper jaws agape, as bystanders struck out at it with their knives and sickles. I stepped aside at the last moment, letting the false beast wobble past. I don't know what's scarier, the real thing or that monstrosity, Gint said, as we step to the side of the street to allow the procession to stream past. He took in the revelers that paraded past us, splashing along the street. They're all wearing masks. So they are. Doesn't look like any celebration I've ever seen. I looked at him. Seen many, then. Gint shrugged. Better to say, seen one, you've seen them all. He looked at me. So, what's the plan now? Wait for someone to come looking for you? No, my plan is to find the local road agent post. You can do what you like. Why do you need a road agent? Sending money home to mother? He laughed. I didn't. When he realized I wasn't joining in, he fell silent. None of your business. Well, I'm not doing anything else. Might as well go with you. I didn't argue. As long as he stayed quiet, I didn't care. Messages were delivered in myriad ways in Gyron. Official documentation was the province of the Swifthawk agents. All private couriers. Everyone else used the road agents. They were a loose confederation of couriers and gossip mongers, often paid by local lords or conclaves to act as dispatch riders for the populace. Mern hadn't sent the coin by private courier. It had come by rider, wrapped in a book of catechisms. A sort of joke. Mern's sense of humor had always been hard-edged. Regardless, it meant there might be a record of who'd sent it. Mern himself, maybe, or someone who knew him. That was the place to start. I'd become good at finding people in the past few years. No one disappeared more quickly than a debtor, especially when they owed money to someone like Caspar Gunno. The road agent post was located in a central square. It was a narrow shack squeezed between two larger, older stone buildings. A sign marked with the sigil of a bird in flight hung over the entrance. "Wait out here," I said. Gint didn't argue. He saluted lazily and took up a position beside the doorway. The door was unlocked, so I didn't bother to knock. When I stepped inside, the first thing I saw was the elf on the table. She groaned softly, so I knew she was alive. I'd never seen an elf with a hangover before. I hadn't even been aware that they could get drunk. She lay back on the table, one foot resting on the back of a chair, her hand over her eyes. I knocked on the doorframe.
Go away.
I need to ask a question.
Ask someone else.
Are you in charge?
No. There. You asked, I answered. Go away.
No. I yanked the chair out from under her foot and kicked the table. She was on her feet in moments, a knife in her hand. I twisted aside, and the blade gouged the doorframe.
Who in the seven hells do you think you are?
She hissed, eyes bleary. She was pretty in the way elves are pretty. Like a snake or a wolf. Like something best observed from a distance. Someone who's not inclined to give you more than one chance with that pig sticker. I fell into a crouch, arms spread, ready to deflect or snatch as the occasion warranted. Settle down, or I'll take it from you. She shook her head.
I'd like to see you try.
Despite her words, she straightened and sheathed the blade.
What do you want?
Are you the road agent for this Kenton?
For my sins?
She went to the counter, where a bucket of water rested on a stand. She bent and splashed some onto her face. She ran her hands through her hair, dragging it back and swiftly knotting it with a leather strap.
I'll ask again. What do you want?
I need to know who sent me this. I set the coin down on the table. She sneered.
How am I supposed to know that?
It was delivered by one of your road agents, or someone wearing their livery. She frowned and picked up the coin. After a moment, she tossed it back to me.
When did you receive it?
I told her, and she sighed.
That was Pulo. He isn't back yet. Do you have a record of who wanted it delivered?
Pulo would know, but he's not back yet, like I said. I looked around. There were papers everywhere, and logbooks mouldering in tottering piles. Notices mildewed on the walls.
You don't keep records, then?
I told you, Pulo would know, but...
He's not back yet. Yes, I know.
I looked at her.
When do you expect him back?
Yesterday. I was careful not to let my annoyance show. When he returns, let him know someone wants to talk to him. She went to a cabinet and pulled down a clay bottle and a cup.
I'll make a note. Name and address?
Blackwood. Haran Blackwood. As for an address, care to make a recommendation? She emptied her cup and refilled it.
The Stag's Head, over on Eelmonger Lane.
They have rooms available?
No clue, but the wine is good.
She turned away.
Close the door behind you.
I didn't. Gint was waiting for me where I'd left him, an apple in his hand. Anything? He asked, as he fell into step with me.
Yes, I pointed to the apple. Where'd you get that?
Orchard, Gint said. He gestured vaguely. Found it while you were busy in there. He shined the apple on his sleeve. Sour apples are better than none. I gathered from the tenders that there are similar communal gardens scattered across town. The harvest Deschler was talking about refers to them, mostly.
And the corn and potatoes?
He took a bite of the apple and frowned. Carefully, he spat the bite out.
Too sour.
He wiped his mouth with his hand and flung the apple into a night soil cart.
It tastes like eel, he said.
They must use them as fertilizer. I turned. Look for Eelmonger Lane.
What's on Eelmonger Lane?
Somewhere to get out of the rain, hopefully. I glanced back at the post and saw the elf watching us from the doorway. She didn't look as hungover as I'd first thought. When she realized she'd been noticed, she stepped back and shut the door. When I turned back, Gint was looking at me.
Something wrong? He asked.
No, I said. Not that I can see.
Chapter 9. The Stag's Head.
Dusk was coming on by the time we found Eelmonger Lane. The village was like a miniature labyrinth, small but convoluted. It had seemed to contract about us with every passing moment, like a trap with no way out. The Stag's Head sat back along a narrow side street, its rear hanging over the waters of the canal. Skiffs and small boats were moored to the jetty that extended from its back wall like an animal's tail. Smoke seeped from the slanted chimney, and the windows were shuttered against the weather. From the sound of it, it was full of customers, bargemen and drunks, eager to spend their wages. Standing outside the grimy wood-frame building in the spitting rain, I hesitated. Gint looked at me.
Are we going in, or...
After you, I said. The door was little more than a curtain of tanned hide. and I swept it back. Noise and stink struck us like physical blows. The common room of the grog house echoed with the sounds of laughter and wages being placed. The air smelled of burning fat, wood smoke, and sweat. Like a tavern, in other words. Tables and chairs surrounded a central fire pit. The bar, such as it was, stretched along the far wall. There was a second room near the bar, and it stank of grease and eel. The kitchen, I suspected. At least I hoped it was the kitchen. Most of the tables closest to the fire pit were occupied. None of them looked friendly. Fishermen, milkweed harvesters and others, men and women both, with hard eyes and hard faces, blistered hands and scarred fingers. They nursed clay mugs of harsh cider or sipped at bowls of soup. Something snarled, and the floor shook as a heavy weight struck the supports below. Tables rattled as hands steadied mugs and bowls. A shout of laughter went up from the rear of the common room.
"What's that racket?" Gint asked.
"Over there," I pointed. A crowd of boatmen and loafers surrounded a hole in the floor. We pushed through the crowd, ignoring the angry looks tossed in our direction. I could hear wages being made as we reached the edge of the pit. Slabs of bronze had been sunk deep into the water below, creating a makeshift cistern. Within the circle, an adolescent Trogoth slammed warty fists against the bronze and bellowed. Abattoir leavings floated on the surface of the water, slopping against the bronze or spilling out into the canal. The Trogoth resembled a human, but only in basic outline. It was an overgrown, hunched shape, with wide, bat-like ears and a face that was twisted all out of proportion. Jaws full of outsized teeth champed and gnawed the air with mindless ferocity. A mane of kelp-like hair hung from the creature's scalp and crept down its scaly back. Broken claws scraped at the bronze as the creature tried and failed to haul itself out of the pit. A collar of iron bit into its wattle neck, and a heavy anchor chain was attached to it. The chain was hooked to something below the waterline, preventing the beast from going very far.
"It's only a pup," Gint said. I laughed. "Don't tell me you feel sorry for the brute."
I'd fought too many Trogoths to feel sympathetic to the creature's plight.
"And what if I do?" he said.
I shrugged and stepped back as someone dragged a heavy, twitching sack towards the pit. Patrons leapt aside as the sack twisted towards them. Something inside it hissed gutturally. It took several men to upend the sack over the mouth of the pit. A massive serpentine shape slipped out and fell towards the water. The leopard eel shrilled audibly as it struck the surface. It rose immediately and began to circle the Trogoth. The Trogoth roared and caught at its attacker, eliciting a spray of venom. The two creatures reeled back and forth, bouncing off the bronze slabs. Their blood mingled, turning the water the color of tar. Gint turned away, grimacing.
"What's the matter? Don't feel like wagering a few motes?"
"I only wager on games of skill," he said flatly. "Let's find a table." We claimed one in the corner and sat, watching the other patrons pretend to pay us no attention. I wondered if any of them knew Mern. If they did, he probably owed them money. That was usually the way of it. Mern had debts the way a crow had feathers. He'd lived well in the regiment, too well, beyond his means. He'd always had a fancy for comets and the things they could buy.
Never save tomorrow what you could spend today. That had been Mern's motto. I'd found it amusing at first. Only later had it become concerning. And now here I am again, I murmured. I drew Mern's coin from my coat without thinking about it. I turned it slowly. One more time. For the last time.
Lucky coin? Gint asked, watching me.
I dropped the coin back into my pocket. No, I'm hungry. I stood. Gint smiled.
I thought you'd never ask. Bowl of soup, please. And a mug of the local cider.
I considered telling him to buy his own, but decided not to waste my breath. Instead, I made my way to the bar, careful not to make eye contact with anyone. In a place like this, a wrong look could get you a fish knife in the guts. Eyes followed me regardless, and whispers as well. Strangers were always of interest in a place like this. At the bar, a surly, silver-haired woman greeted me with hostility.
"What do you want?" she asked.
I could hear the unspoken implication. I smiled in as friendly a way as I could manage. "Some food and something to drink for my friend and I." Before she could reply, I put a few coins on the bar. "If you have any left." She gazed at me sourly. Then, almost reluctantly, she pulled the coins towards her. She bit one. Her eyes widened slightly, and she quickly thrust the coins into her apron.
"Sit down," she said. "I'll bring some bowls."
"And some bread, if it pleases you," I said as she turned away. I made my way back to our table. There was a shout from the Trogoth pit, and a high, shrill screech. One of the combatants had finally succumbed. Gint was watching the crowd, a rueful look on his face.
"Maybe I should have made a bet after all."
"You'll get your chance. I'm sure they'll drag in another eel before too long." He laughed.
"You're probably right."
He eyed me speculatively.
"I couldn't interest you in a game, could I?"
"No." He sighed and nodded. After a few moments, he said,
"You know, you don't seem like a bad fellow, Haran. Despite the many rough edges. How do you come to work for a man like Caspar Gunno?"
"That's my business."
"And I'm asking."
I was silent for a moment. Then, "I needed a job."
"Easier jobs to be had?"
"Maybe. Maybe I just like it." The soup arrived then. Suddenly ravenous, I fell to eating. It tasted the way it smelled, but it was warm and I was hungry. The bread was tough but chewable. The drink was bitter and pleasingly alcoholic. It steadied me more than I like to admit.
"I find it easier to think with a drink or two in me," Gint said, around a mouthful of bread. "If I'm sober for too long, I start making risky choices."
"Explains why you followed me," I said, as I observed our fellow patrons, and they observed us in turn. Hurried glances and lingering ones. Calculation, assumption, and dismissal.
"I followed you because I'm allergic to boredom."
I nearly choked on a chunk of bread.
"Well, it hasn't been boring, I guess."
Gint's smile was broad.
"Not so far."
He dipped his bread in the soup and chewed thoughtfully.
"So, what happens when you find him?"
"What do you mean?
Planning to beat him up, or what?"
He studied me, and for a moment I saw something in his eyes. A calculation at odds with his normal cheer. I turned my attentions back to my soup.
You ask a lot of questions.
Like I said, you seem like a nice enough fellow. I can't imagine you're going to kill this, man, was it?
What I do or don't do is no concern of yours. He nodded and went back to his food. As I bent back to my own, he said, "Only it seems to me that you've come a long way just to kill a man." I put my spoon down. "Who said I'm going to kill him?"
Gint gestured with a chunk of bread. "I'm not stupid. Collecting debts is all well and good. But this is a trifle too far from the city for anything but bloody murder. And even then, I've never known a leg-breaker to come so far off his patch just to kill one man." He took a bite. "That's the sort of thing you hire a paid killer for."
Caspar Gunno prefers the personal touch.
"So I hear. But do you want to know what I think?"
"No."
He told me anyway, leaning close, as if we were friends.
"I think this is personal." I didn't reply. Someone was watching us, and I was watching them. The old man sat near the fire pit, regarding us openly. Unafraid, or maybe simply unused to being observed in turn. I considered doing him the courtesy of pretending I hadn't noticed, but decided against it. I met his gaze and held it. If he wanted to start something, I welcomed it. It was clear from the number of heads bending towards the old man and the intensity of the whispered conversation at his table that he was someone of standing. I sipped my drink and waited. I'd seen cults before. I knew the signs. A place like this, isolated, deprived, was fertile ground for sour fruit. But I was no witch hunter. Once I might have cared enough to investigate further. At the moment, I just wanted to find Myrne and go home. I swallowed a spoonful of soup. Of course, Myrne's trouble might well have to do with whatever was going on here. I hoped not. I wasn't in the business of faith these days. There were geists in the common room. Just little things, wisps of bad feeling. Ragged and small, barely strong enough to exist, let alone hurt anyone. Children, maybe. One of them stared at me with a face like a sheet of crumpled linen, with three black holes for eyes and a mouth torn in it. It made as if to speak. A moment later, it was gone. Suddenly, the soup wasn't sitting right. I leaned back. A warning, perhaps. Gint coughed, and I looked up. The old man was making his way towards our table. Gint made to speak, but I stamped on his foot, silencing him. The old man caught a chair, dragged it over, and sat, without waiting for an invitation.
"Don't know you," he said, without preamble.
His voice was soft and creaky, like branches in a windstorm. "I don't know you, either." I glanced around. We were the center of attention, though most were trying to pretend otherwise. I wondered if this was one of those quaint local customs, like hunting men or riding a horse naked.
"You're not from here," the old man said.
"No." I dipped the last of my bread into my bowl and took a bite.
"I know everyone from around here. Every face, every voice. Don't know yours, though."
The old man peered at me sidelong, as if trying to memorize my features.
You a merchant? No, not got the look, you. Sellsword, then. No business for sellswords here. We defend our own, happy to say.
I've heard different, I said.
You heard wrong.
There was a bit of heat there. He didn't like being argued with.
Good thing I'm not a sellsword, then.
No?
What are you selling, if not steel?
I'm not selling anything. I paused. I'm buying.
The old man sniffed and looked at the fire pit. Not much to buy here. We make what we need. Not for selling, but for having. That's always been the way of it.
Does that include information? The old man grunted.
None of that here. I'm not a gossip, me. We don't gossip.
Eyes slid away from us, and chairs turned away, as if that had been a signal. I had the feeling that this was a test, one I was failing. I didn't like that. But I kept my temper in check. I'd had practice dealing with men like this.
But you do know everyone in this village, I pressed gently. You're looking for someone, then?
A man named Mern, Everick Mern.
Funny sort of name, that.
You know him?
I knew a Mern or two.
The old man leaned back, and the barkeep appeared, drink in hand. She set it down and scurried off, all but genuflecting the whole while. The old man took a sip and smacked his lips appreciatively.
Lots of Merns around here once. Not so many now.
No?
No. They all died. Sickness, some of them. One or two drowned. When they were out where they ought not to have been, when the waters rose. Swamp took the rest, as it takes most. Not a soft sort of place, the swamp.
The last was said with a meaningful look at us. Gint said nothing, but I could feel him tense. It was a threat, and not a subtle one. I almost laughed. I'd been threatened by more frightening men in my time, and a few things that weren't men at all.
So I hear. You smell like stone and fire. City lad. What do you know about the swamp, save what old men like me tell you? Nothing, that's what. If you did, you'd know better than to sit here, smelling of the city, asking questions.
The old man was smiling, but there was nothing friendly in the expression. Speaking of which, you never said whether you knew Everick Mern or not. I was pushing it, but I didn't think it was going to come to violence. Not yet. Not here. This was just a scouting foray. He was feeling us out.
You ought to leave this place. There's nothing for you here.
I'll be the judge of that, I think. Thank you for the advice, though. The old man's expression became mulish. He was clearly a man not used to hearing the word no. Chairs scraped back throughout the common room. Gint grabbed my arm, but I ignored him.
Now, about Mern, I raised my voice. I'll pay for the information. I know times are hard, even with the harvest.
I looked around the room, but no eyes met mine, save those of a heavy-set man sitting near the entrance. The big man surreptitiously indicated the doorway, rose, and left. I looked back at the old man. I smiled.
What about you?
A few coins always come in handy.
Don't need your filthy money, city dweller,
the old man said.
Me nor anyone else. You'll find no sucker here. Go on and go. Leave us to our business.
He leaned forward, suddenly more menacing than he'd seemed at first. I revised my estimation of him.
You only get one warning from me.
Then perhaps I'd best take it, eh? I pushed my chair back unhurriedly, my hand resting on the hilt of my knife. Of course, I'm not the sort of man to take kindly to warnings, or threats, for that matter. The old man's gaze sharpened, and I was reminded of the knives and sickles the celebrants carried. He rose abruptly, turned, and went back to his seat without a backward glance. Gint released a slow breath as patrons turned away from us.
That was stupid.
Depends on what happens next, I said. He shook his head.
Is this how you make friends?
Wouldn't know. Don't have any. He leaned close.
The man who left, you think he knows something?
Only one way to find out. I made to rise. Gint caught my arm.
You sure?
He asked in a low voice. I shook him off. No, but I might as well. Stay here.
You don't have to tell me twice.
He pulled out his deck of cards and shuffled them. He looked around, frowning.
Maybe I'll see if anyone is interested in a game.
You do that, I said, as I headed for the door. No one tried to stop me. Outside, it was still raining. I heard a whistle and turned. The big man stood between two buildings, just out of sight. I looked around and then hurried towards him.
You really got coin, the big man growled.
He stank of salt and eel. Depends. Do you have something for me? The big man sniffed and looked at the tavern.
Come with me. Don't want them to see us talking. Don't need any trouble.
I glanced back and saw the old man standing in the tavern doorway. But I didn't say anything. No sense spooking my new friend.
Lead the way.
Chapter 10. Fulda. The big man led me down a crooked side street, across a boardwalk square, to a small shop sitting diagonally to the rest of the buildings.
My shop, he grunted.
His accent was rough and foreign, harsh. Like me, he wasn't from around here. I guess that was why he was willing to talk. He shut the door behind us and latched it. He peered out the window and then turned back to light a candle.
Show me the money. Hurry up.
What are you worried about? The big man smiled nastily.
You really aren't from around here, otherwise you wouldn't ask that.
In the candlelight, I saw that the shop was small, a counter and a back room hidden behind a tatty curtain. Sacks of dead eels sat on the floor, and dried and salted strips of meat hung from racks on the wall.
Eelmonger, I said. What of it?
Business good?
We're not here to talk about my business.
Something clattered in the back room. My hand went to my knife, and the eelmonger jerked back, eyes wide.
What was that?
Nothing. Nothing, the big man said in a low voice.
Keep your voice down.
I stared at him for a moment, and then stepped quickly behind the counter and headed for the curtain.
Hey, he said. Hey, no.
I swept the curtain aside. A boy, barely 11 seasons, jerked back, nearly dropping his basket. It was full of eels, some of them still twitching. The boy was grubby, dressed in homespun clothes, but well-fed. "Hello," I said. The boy stared up at me, mouth slightly agape. "Leave him be," the big man growled. "Get to the back and strip the rest of those bones," he added, nudging the boy. The boy nodded jerkily and hurried out of sight, dragging the basket with him. The man watched him go and then turned to me. "Your son?" "Yes," the man said. "Money." I took out a handful of coins and spread them across the counter. The eelmonger licked his lips. Rather than taking the coins, he retrieved an eel from a sack behind the counter and slapped it down on his chopping block. It was a small thing, barely as long as a man's forearm, and slick-looking. It had a vicious mouth full of teeth and eyes like dollops of jade. I had seen similar eels cut up and fried at street stalls in the fastness. They were decent, with enough Axian spice to cover the taste. "That buys you two. How do you want them?" The eelmonger drew his cleaver from his apron. "Fillet them. Take your time." The eelmonger gave a harsh laugh and brought the cleaver down, chopping the creature's head off. A flick of his wrist was enough to scrape the snapping jaws off the block and into a waiting basket. "Cur eels," he said. "Bite you even after they're dead. Got to remove the head first, just to be safe." He began to fillet the eel with the edge of his cleaver. "They're a gift, you know." "The eels?" He nodded, not looking up from his work. "That's what the locals say. The jade bloods, I mean. A gift from their god." He plied his cleaver deftly. "I thought all of them worshipped the Ever Queen. These don't, though. Not really." "Who do they worship?" "Something else." He paused. "It's got a fair few names. It's a little god, I think. Some spirit of the swamp. They used to bend their kin over wooden altars and spill their guts with knives of eel bone to appease it." "They don't anymore?" He paused, as if uncertain how to reply.